this morning. Come on in. Before we get started with our study, I do want to say a prayer, specifically for the Rebels. Nick texted us this morning and said that they went into the hospital. Elizabeth was having some high blood pressure, so she's going to have a C-section this morning. So need to keep Elizabeth and Annie in our prayers, but the whole Rebels family during this time. But we'll say a prayer, and then we'll continue our study together. Let's pray together. Oh, Lord our God, we come before you grateful for the day that you've blessed us with, another opportunity to be here as a family in your presence, specifically as we get to think about your word. But we are encouraged that we get to pray together and lift things up to you. In this moment, we want to lift up the Rebels. Please be with Elizabeth and Annie as she's having a C-section this morning. Take care of all of them as they go through these procedures and the recovery that will come afterwards. We know that there's a lot of joy and excitement that goes into this, but there's also a lot of different emotions and things that are surrounding it. So I pray that you'll be with all of them and that you'll be a comfort to them as they go through this. But thank you for blessing their family and bringing life into this world. We love you so much, God, and we pray this to you in the name of Jesus. Amen. So our goal this morning is to transition from our slight little detour that we had last week and just kind of backtrack and think about where we are in this study. We've been following the book of the Kings, looking at these different narratives, looking at these different individuals, these characters, and how they relate or how they help us relate to God, because we get to look at how they related to God, and it kind of sets a pattern for us. What happened last week, we took this little detour and we talked about prophets. And we didn't get to cover all the ground that was intended. And of course, that's going to be the mantra for every single week, I think, is going to be our goal here as we're trying to steadily make our way toward the end of 2 Kings. But we're about halfway now, and we're actually going to be transitioning between 1 Kings to 2 Kings. But what's been happening by thinking about the prophets is throughout these books, you have these individuals that are going to speak on God's behalf. They pop into the story where you get to see God interact with people in a more specific way than just through the Old Testament law, which is fine. And that sets all the parameters that we really need to know how to be a good king or how to be a good individual in the sight of God. But a prophet will come in and will run in parallel to what God has already said and what he's doing along with these kings. And he has these prophets that come in that say, hey, you're doing a good job, or hey, here's how I want you to address this enemy, or this is some sin that's in your life, you need to get that correct, or I'm about to rip your family apart is what God says, because you have torn my family, my people, the Israelites, apart. And we didn't get into the specific stories themselves, and the case is going to it's going to be the same case today, is that we're going to be moving between 1 Kings to 2 Kings. And it's almost like if you were to open up those books together, and you know, and I was thinking about my Bible. As you know, I drink a lot of coffee, which means in my Bible, there's a lot of coffee stains. It just happens that it falls on there. And usually, you know, if I'm not paying attention, it doesn't dry fast enough. I'll close my Bible. And when I open it up the next time to that same page, you have this identical stain between them, right? You've got a coffee stain on one side and it matches on the other. I want to use that as an illustration to think about this transition of moving between Elijah to Elisha. It actually happens right there at the fold of 1 Kings and 2 Kings. And if you were to put them together, almost like a stain on each other, and open it back up, you're going to see some things that Elijah did as a prophet. And he passes the torch, really, he passes the Spirit of God onto his servant, the next person in line, which is Elisha. And some of the same things that Elijah did, you can see Elisha doing, but it's kind of neat that the wording of Elisha himself, it says that, you know, he requested this double portion of the Spirit. And if you look at the miracles that Elijah did, and then look at the miracles that Elisha does, it's almost double. It's just neat to see how that lays out. And if you go through these first, I would say, the first nine chapters of 2 Kings, you're actually going to be following the narrative of Elisha. And toward the end of 1 Kings, you're following Elijah and all the things he did. And you can almost use them as kind of this overarching narrative that you place the kings in the midst of. And it's neat how the author of these books, how he's trying to teach us this. You know, he's in retrospect. Remember what we talked about is that 1 and 2 Kings is moving, for us as we're reading it, it's moving toward the conclusion of Israel and Judah, which is exile. And whoever the author of 1 and 2 Kings is looking back over all of these kings and all these situations. And I think essentially it's trying to answer the question, how did we end up here? How did we end up in exile, away from the temple of God, away from the presence of God, although not really ever away from him, but away from all these blessings and things, the land that was promised to Abraham? How did we end up here? And that question is being answered. And there's different ways that it's taken us through this narrative and showing us. And one way is to look at Elijah and Elisha and their ministry. And although we're not going to be getting into their stories, we're going to be looking at the kings. These individuals pop up and you can watch how they interact with the people, not just the people of God, but even these other nations, these other even pagans, and you see them coming along in the story and you see the things they did where they are these representatives of God teaching God's word. And essentially, we're going to have to ask the question, are the people following them? And what happens with Elijah and Elisha, and this is what Jesus will utilize as well, he's going to say the majority of their ministry maybe was to Israel itself, which was, mostly negative. But they also went to the enemies of Israel and Judah. They went to people that were outcasts. They went to individuals that you wouldn't think God would have a care about at all, but it really, you find that God cares for all people, and he teaches them. And so as you're watching Elijah and Elisha, you're seeing all of these other people that easily and quickly and humbly submit to God, and then you've got these kings coming along that don't do the same thing. And I think it's interesting, and we won't get into all of those stories at all. We just don't have the time for it. But you're going to see with the kings that we're going to look at today, and we're mostly just going to focus on the fast facts about these kings, you're going to see how they relate to God's word. And just keep in your mind, as you're reading through 1 and 2 Kings, how easily people will follow what God says and how stubborn a leader can be. I was trying to find a good map for this, and I need to put one together myself, but this was the closest I could find. If you're going to make a map of Elijah and Elisha's ministry and where they spent their time and what they did, because you'll be reading through and it says Elisha was over here with a Shunammite, and then he went over here to Gilgal, and then he went over here to Bethel. It's like, what in the world is going on? Well, I found this one in, sorry, you can't see it very well, but I load all these up so you can have them on our website. But this is a map that shows each one of the stories where Elijah and Elisha pop in and where they are. You can tell literally they are all over the map. There is not a single territory. There is not a single place that is outside of God's parameters of people he wants to talk to. Because if you'll remember, we got the northern and southern tribes. And although I don't have those circled here, these guys are ministering in Israel, they're ministering in Judah, they're ministering outside of the land. It does not matter. If God says something, they're going to go do it. And you've got commanders of these armies like the Syrians, who are actually going to lead the people into exile a little bit later. They're converting, where they actually want to take some ground, some dirt, some jars of dirt from the land of Israel and take it back to their home because they said, this is where God dwells. And I just want a little piece of where you can find God. And that's with Naaman, as you think about him and his leprosy. And so their ministry is very interesting. But I thought that was a unique way of laying this out. And I'll try and establish my own a little bit later, just because for my personal benefit, I want to see where these guys are and what they do. Now, the majority of our study today, like I said, is going to be focusing on these fast facts about the kings and see how they relate together. Where we ended, our last king that we looked at before we took some time with the prophets was Ahab. Ahab is considered one of the most wicked kings, although he's not as bad as Jeroboam, but in some ways he was even worse because of his relationship with his wife and all the evil that they did. But you also see that his father, Omri, which is the beginning of this dynasty, and we're going to see it end with Ahab and his sons. It's going to take a shift, and that's what's going to take us into next week with a man named Jehu. And he's a very fascinating character, and I'm excited about studying that with all of us next week. But where we ended with Ahab, and this is exactly the same slide that we had last time, that Ahab becomes a king after his father Omri. He sets up a capital in Samaria, which is about the dead center of the northern nation. So it's between Bethel and Dan, where those images are that Jeroboam had, and those do not remove from their place until much later. Okay, so we got to keep that in focus. Every time it says that they didn't get rid of Jeroboam's sins, it's saying they did not get rid of those golden calves that they made that are in Dan and Bethel. But Samaria is right in the middle of it, and that becomes the capital. And in the midst of that capital, Ahab establishes an entire temple worship to Baal. He sets up a temple, but also puts in the Asherah and all these kind of things where this becomes a central hub for pagan worship. So literally, the northern kingdom is hemmed in by idolatry. Left and right, you cannot get away from it. And Jezebel is right there next to them, and she is inciting him to do evil, is what it says. So them as a pair are awful. And so you've got these prophets that come along like Elijah that says, look, you guys, your reign's going to end. Because of all the evil that you've done, man, this kingdom's going to be taken away from you. But there's this little blurb, and I had written an article on it in our bulletin a couple of weeks ago, where it talks about Ahab repented. And he humbles himself, although he's still considered an evil king. When he humbles himself, God comes to him. He says, because of this, I'm not going to rip the house away from you in your hands. I'm going to take it away from your sons. Shows us this mercy and grace that God is able to provide to anyone, but then you see Ahab going away from that anyways. And so this is just a retelling of the story of Ahab. Now, where we're about to go is going to be a little confusing, and that's why we're going to take this a little bit slow. If this is not confusing already with some of these names, this one's about to get you. Reading through this, and I'm trying to make sure I have it in my mind as well, you'll be reading through, and if you've already gotten to this point, you might have thrown your hands up at one point and said, what in the world did I just read? Before we get into these kings, I want to show you their family tree, because there are going to be identical names between the kings of Judah and the kings of Israel. So this was helpful for me, and I hope it's helpful for you. So we're thinking about Ahab. All right, here's his family tree. Okay, so you've got Omri, which is Ahab's father. Ahab marries Jezebel. We know who her dad is because she comes from an entire pagan nation and he intermarries. So that's Jezebel. They have three children, two sons and a daughter. The daughter is Athaliah. Then he has two sons, Jehoram and Ahaziah. I'm going to say that differently every time because it's not in my head right now. So you've got these two sons and you've got a daughter. And just know that Omri's dynasty is going to end with those sons. Now, let me introduce to you Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat has a bigger family tree, and this is a king of Judah. So you've got Ahab over here that is going to be king of Israel, and right next to him is Jehoshaphat, which is the king of Judah. And here's his family. All right, so you've got all the way back up, you got Abijah, which was the son of Rehoboam. So we can go all the way down the line, right? So you can think about David, Solomon, Abijah. Then you get into Asa, which was a good king. We talked about him. Jehoshaphat's going to be a good king as well, and we're going to have some information about him. He has a lot of sons. Do you see the first two sons underneath him? Jehoram and Azariah. The same names as Jehoram and Azariah over here. It's going to get confusing just looking at how similar their names are, and you're thinking, what in the world is going on here? But what makes it even more complicated is that these lines are actually going to converge, where Athaliah is going to marry one of Jehoshaphat's sons. And so you're actually going to see this blending of both Israel and Judah together, and that's going to cause some issues as well. But there's also another challenge that you're going to find with all of these is that there is a rewording of their names. Sometimes it's going to say Jehoram, sometimes it's just going to say Joram. So just be prepared that all of these different names are going to appear in different ways, and it can get very confusing. But we're just going to hold on and just expect it to work in that way. So if you need to, come back to this family tree and compare Ahab with Jehoshaphat. And remember, with Jehoshaphat, everybody that's in Judah, it's going to be a father to a son, to a father to a son, a father to a son. If you want just a quick recounting of it, go read Matthew chapter 1. How do you get to Jesus from David? It lays out all of these kings in a line. So hopefully that makes sense, because if this doesn't make sense, then certainly the next part we're about to do will not make sense. But just know that you've got these similar names, and the scriptures were slow and easy with them. it gives us as much information as we need to be able to differentiate, although usually in our fast reading, we can just gloss over it. But it'll tell us with a lot of compounded details who belongs to whom. So, are we good with that? Can we come back here if we're like, okay, hold on, I need to stop and think. We can come back to this family tree. All right, so we talked about Ahab, and this is Israel over here. Now we're going to jump over to Judah, and we're going to follow this next king in line after Asa, and this is Jehoshaphat. So if you have your Bibles, go to 1 Kings chapter 22, looking at verse 41. This is the very end. We got these two kings that are going to be mentioned at the very end of this book, but it's going to carry us over into the rest of 2 Kings. So here's what I know about Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat, the son of Asa, began to reign over Judah in the fourth year of Ahab, king of Israel. So once again, if you're going to just stack these on top of each other, that's helping us see where these things line up. Ahab reigned for a while. And in a very short amount of time, this is where Jehoshaphat comes. So you're actually going to see majority of Ahab's reign is going to be working along the side of Jehoshaphat. Where actually their reigns end at the same time because they get killed at similar timing. Verse 42, Jehoshaphat was 35 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 25 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Azubah, the daughter of Shilhi. He walked in all the way of Asa, his father. He did not turn aside from it, doing what was right in the sight of the Lord. You just stop and take a breath every single time you see something like that. And this is where I think it's, once again, very beneficial to think about a parent passing down a legacy or passing down information to the next person. For a son to be called good like his father, what a rewarding title that is. I mean, we think about that just with our normal relationships where we say, man, you're just like your dad. Isn't that such a compliment? Thinking about that legacy or that lineage where you can see somebody that is faithful and you see their children that are faithful and you see their children that are faithful. And that's why we think about elders in the same kind of fashion, don't we? Elders that rule their household well, and you've got believers that are there. They say, man, I understand that this man is able to shepherd the flock. Because look at how he handles his own family, have faithful children. It's such a compliment. And I think when we read through the kings of Judah, specifically because it's always going to say they did good for those that are good. They did good like their father. Asa was really good. He did this religious reform that we talked about where he comes in, he starts changing all these things up. But there's always that exception where it says that he didn't take down the high places. And that's exactly what we find here with this description of Jehoshaphat, is that we read in verse 43, he did good in the sight of God, like his father Asa, yet the high places were not taken away, and the people still sacrificed and made offerings in the high places. Every time I read this, I just think, those pesky high places. Like, why can they not just get rid of them? The time is coming where it's going to happen. Every single one of them is going to be destroyed. It helps us understand this, though, when we read some of these other prophets, specifically Isaiah that we'll get to, where he has this very strong language along with Ezekiel, where they, from God's perspective, he's looking at Israel and he said, every single mountain, every single literally high point there is, you guys found a tree to go and whore underneath with the gods of that land. I mean, that's how striking this language is. He said, if there's a high place, if there's a tree, if there's a mountain, you guys found a way to put a god there, and you just completely committed adultery away from me with these things. And it's true, as you keep seeing these high places, you're like, why can't they just knock them out? They're all over the land, not just in Judah, but they're all over Israel. And you've got that southern point of the northern tribe where down there in Bethel, where they fortified that, where you can't even go into that land without having some issues, and that's where they start clashing together. But it's really under Jehoshaphat where you're going to find this unity between Israel and between Judah itself. But when it talks about these high places not being destroyed, not being taken away, is they can't hit every single one of them. Although Jehoshaphat actually starts making some reforms. And I have some extra verses up here to help us understand it. In these fast facts, we just looked at 1 Kings 22, verse 43, and about middle of the paragraph, although he did a lot of good, he made these religious reforms, as we can see in verse 46, And from the land he exterminated the remnant of the male cult prostitutes who remained in the days of his father Asa. One of the things we saw about Asa, he got rid of those, but there was still some remnant. Even if he knocked down those altars, even if he knocked down those temples, you still have people that are holding on to those thoughts. Jehoshaphat comes in and eradicates those. Rarely do I do this, but I want to hop over and look at Chronicles. Because there are some descriptions here that I think are important for us to see. Let's go to 2 Chronicles chapter 17. Because we only have a few verses about Jehoshaphat. That's it. Like that's the end of them there at the very end of 1 Kings. But if you go to 2 Chronicles, we actually have a few chapters that tells us of all the things that Jehoshaphat did in his reforms. In 2 Chronicles chapter 17, if I can get over there with you. Verse 6. Well, actually, let's back all the way up to verse 1. I think this is important. Jehoshaphat, his son, speaking of Asa, reigned in his place and strengthened himself against Israel. He placed forces in all the fortified cities of Judah and set garrisons in the land of Judah and in the cities of Ephraim that Asa, his father, had captured. So even broadening the borders, okay? Verse 3, the Lord was with Jehoshaphat because he walked in the earlier ways of his father David. He did not seek the Baals, but sought the God of his father and walked in his commandments, and not according to the practices of Israel. Therefore, the Lord established the kingdom in his hand, and all Judah brought tribute to Jehoshaphat, and he had great riches and honor. And here's a key, verse 6. His heart was courageous in the ways of the Lord, and furthermore, he took the high places in the Asherim out of Judah. Now, we may look at this and we think, all right, is there a slight contradiction here? I thought that the author of the Kings said that he did not get rid of the high places. But here we are in Chronicles saying that, and he removed them out of Judah. Furthermore, let's keep reading. I've got another passage here. Chapter 19, verse 3. But might as well back up to verse 1. Jehoshaphat, so this is 2 Chronicles 19, starting in verse 1. Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, returned in safety to his house in Jerusalem. So talking about a war that they had where he was helping Ahab. But Jehu, the son of Hanani, the seer, went out to meet him and said to King Jehoshaphat, should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord? Because of this, wrath has gone out against you from the Lord. Verse 3, nevertheless. Anytime you see that nevertheless, we're going to have another mention of this, but I told you to be looking for it, and here's one of those examples in Chronicles. Nevertheless, some good is found in you, for you destroyed the Ashereth out of the land and have set your heart to seek God. You know, I thought that he didn't get rid of the high places, but it seems like he did do some of it. But there's also this issue where he was working in cohort with Ahab, and God's like, oh, we really need to talk about that. You're actually approving some of the things that Ahab did, although, nevertheless, you did some good by removing some of these things out. And here's the last verse, chapter 20, verse 33. This is the conclusion, and look at verse 31. We'll back up to there. This is the conclusion of Jehoshaphat's life. Thus Jehoshaphat reigned over Judah. He was 35 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 25 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Azubah, the daughter of Shilhiel. He walked in the way of Asa, his father, and did not turn aside from it, doing what was right in the sight of the Lord. The high places, however, were not taken away. The people had not yet set their hearts upon the God of their fathers. The description that we had in 1 Kings about Jehoshaphat was that he did not remove the high places where the people were offering sacrifices. When we follow his story in Chronicles, it says he was knocking down these places and removing them out of Judah. But it's like every time he took one away, another one would pop up. And although he got rid of them, it wasn't very long that another one would come along, and we ask the question, why? And the writer of Chronicles tells us, because the people's heart was not right. It's interesting, right, that you can have a king striving to do what is right, trying to help these people get out of their sin, but if their heart is not with the Lord, they won't make the change. Doesn't matter how many places he removes, if they don't get it themselves, he's fighting a losing battle, essentially. I think that's exactly what's going on here. Every time he takes one down, they pop another one up. He goes up here to this city and takes one down. They come down here to this city and they pop another one up. Unless their heart turns to the Lord, they will not be saved. And we're going to see the conclusion of that later on when we get to the point of exile. But I thought that was it's not a contradiction at all by looking at these verses. And so don't think that, and if it makes sense, you can see it right here, that it's really the people that stopped them. He's trying to make these reforms, but the people keep getting caught up in their sin. So until their heart turns, God cannot be with them. I thought this, I'm going to jump down to this other image real quick. I thought this was a good way of illustrating this as well. If you follow these different kings of Judah, they're going to be described as evil, good, or these people are going to cause a reform. I would use the word reform. This image just happened to have a revival on there. I thought this is a good way of charting this story. If you look at people who did evil, so Rehoboam, Abijah, you've got someone who did good like Asa, and he starts removing all of these things, but he didn't get rid of the high places. You look at Jehoshaphat, and he makes some solid reforms, right? He goes in, he starts removing more and more than his father did, but then you're going to have a decline. You're going to go back to some of these people that are going to do evil, but then you're going to pop back up to someone like Joash that we'll be looking at next week, where he is going to make the temple flourish again. It's actually been pillaged over and over again since the time of Solomon. It happens first with Rehoboam. And so Joash is going to come in. He's like, look, this is what I talked about. I'm going to build a box. I'm going to cut a hole in it. And you put your offering down in there. And we're going to build the temple back up where it needs to be. It's just a simple process. And we see this every Sunday in a sense, don't we? And so you get these reforms. They go back down. You got some good people. They drop and they come back. And Hezekiah and Josiah, as we'll get to later on in the quarter, they have these reforms. This is saying revival. But I think it's interesting to see how you go from good to actually doing even more. And I think it's just showing how many of these kings are poised for success to go the step further, but they don't, for whatever reason. But you do have people like Jehoshaphat that make it happen. So I like him as a king. I think he's a very interesting story for us to consider. All right, so let's go back to Kings. We got to 1 Kings right there at the very end of it. We got the story of Jehoshaphat. The last thing to take note of before we go further beyond him is that he did end up making an alliance with Israel. And you'd want them to be united. They should come back to being a united nation. But it was at the expense of doing what was right, as we saw God rebuking him just a little bit because he was approving of Ahab's evil. So he still needed to get some things right. And that's where we get that nevertheless. All right, so transitioning from Jehoshaphat, we're now going to look at Israel. So we're going to pop back over to another nation. Look at 1 Kings chapter 22, starting in verse 51. Here comes some of our confusion, okay? So get ready for it. Ahaziah, the son of Ahab, began to reign over Israel and Samaria in the 17th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, and he reigned 2 years over Israel. He did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and walked in the way of his father and the way of his mother and the way of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel to sin. He served Baal and worshipped him and provoked the Lord, the God of Israel, to anger in every way that his father had done. So think about that family tree with Ahab. You've got Ahab having 2 sons and a daughter. This is one of the sons. He's not going to have any children, so when he dies, the family stops there. So that's why his brother is going to become a king. Now, we do have some more verses about him. This is what's going to take us into 2 Kings itself. He's certainly a bad king. And look at that description of him. He did evil like his dad, like his mother, and like Jeroboam. I mean, just compounded. You're getting it from all sides. And you would think, well, no wonder you're a bad king. If you have those kind of examples in your life, but that shouldn't stop someone from doing what is right. As we're about to see with this next king of Israel, I'll give you some descriptions of him of why he's just a little bit different. But Ahaziah, when he becomes a king, it's because his dad was killed in a battle. Ahab got to watch the battle end in front of him as he's sitting in a chariot bleeding. And that was to fulfill those prophecies that Elijah had given. But Ahaziah becomes this king. And through a series of events, this is where you get to in chapter 1, he's in an upper room, falls through the roof, gets sick. You know, he's hurt, he's sick. And so he decides, you know what? I need some help. I want to get over this sickness, and I know that it's going to have to be a supernatural power to do it. So he goes and petitions some of these other people. He says, I want you to go find the god Baal. And specifically one of the, it's kind of like a manifestation is the way they would think of him. But I want you to go find this Baal, and I want you to go ask if he can heal me. And so he gets these messengers on his behalf that are going to go find Beelzebub, as you read in 2 Kings chapter 1, which is also the same description that's going to be given of Satan in the New Testament with Jesus, and it's a mocking name. So just a little shift from one name to the other where it's an insult, actually. And so it's playing off of that here. But as he sends these messengers along their way to go find this god Baal so that Ahaziah can have some healing, Elijah comes along, stops the messengers, and said, what are you guys doing? This is not okay. If you're going to petition anyone at all, it needs to be God, because this God over here, the God of flies that is nothing, he can't help you. So I want you to go tell Ahaziah that it's not going to end well for you. This God doesn't even exist. Just stop in your travels and go back. So they go and tell Ahaziah. He gets so mad. He says, I want you to find Elijah. Same thing Ahab would do, right? Find the troubler of Israel. Bring him here. We're going to kill him. So he sends out 50 soldiers to go find Elijah. Elijah's kind of sitting up on a rock. They come to him and said, hey, you need to come talk to the king. You're causing some problems. Elijah says, no. And he sends fire down and kills all 50 of them. One of them escapes, goes back, and like, Ahaziah, this is not good. he just sent fire down. So Ahaziah says, let's do it again. So he sends 50 more. Elijah says, I'm not coming with you. Strikes him down again. Does it. The third cohort that comes, the soldier that's leading them, he falls down. He says, Elijah, please don't kill me. I'm just the messenger. I'm just coming on behalf of the king. Will you come back and talk to him? And Elijah's like, oh, yeah, I'll tell him. Like, that's how it goes. And there's so many other stories with these prophets where you read them, and you're like, some of them sarcastic. Some of them are humorous. But, I mean, you think about literally these scorching bodies laying around. By the third person, he's like, I get this. I know what I need to do. Just come talk to him. He said, okay. So he goes talk to Ahaziah, and we find out very quickly that he's not going to recover from his sickness. And his story ends there. You get to 2 Kings chapter 1 by verse 18. He stops. And because he didn't have any children, the next king of Israel is going to be his brother, which is Jehoram. Okay? Still don't get confused. We're about to change our colors. We're about to go to Judah in just a second. We're just focusing on Israel. You've got Jehoram. Sometimes his name is Joram. So just in case you need a little bit more confusion about these names, just go ahead and make note of that. Jehoram is Joram, in the same way that you're going to see the next king that comes along. So 2 Kings chapter 3 is where we're going to get some of these stories about Jehoram. I'm going to start in verse 1. In the 18th year of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, Jehoram, the son of Ahab, became king over Israel and Samaria. So he's given us the family line. Just know this is the Jehoram that belongs to Ahab. He's in the capital of Samaria, and he's going to reign for 12 years. He did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. Take note of this. This is so interesting to me. Though not like his father and mother, for he put away the pillar of Baal that his father had made. In verse 3, circle that first word. Nevertheless, he clung to the sin of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, which he made Israel to sin. He did not depart from it. Not to be, you know, confused, but if you'll see, my red X is not quite as red as Ahaziah. I just think it's so interesting that you've got this guy, and really if you follow his story, and this is where you're going to watch Elisha the prophet, and find out when Jehoram comes into the story where he kind of willingly submits in some of these places. Now, he's in Samaria, and what we know about Samaria is that's the capital of Israel, smack dab in the middle of the golden calves, but there's also the entire, you know, this is where the main central hub for worship of Baal is. And he comes in, and he says, let's take that out. Part of it is because Elisha told him. Part of it is because he realizes, look, I don't need to be doing this. And as you read through his story, you find that he was not like his father and his mother, although he still did what was bad. Let's see, I want to look at, let's go to 2 Kings chapter 3. This is toward the end of that paragraph. 2 Kings chapter 3, starting in verse 10. So there's this this alliance, there's this battle that's going to happen between Israel and Judah and Edom. They're going to work together as a cohort against Moab. Okay, so that's kind of what's going on here. But you've got this king, and he's going to learn how to relate to God. And it shows us a little bit of insight that he gets something that other people are missing. We're not going to call him a good king. We can't do that. The scriptures don't allow us to. They show us that he was still bad, but he had this perspective on God where he was so close. Here's a little bit of how the story is going to go from here. Starting in verse 10. Then the king of Israel said, "Alas, the Lord has called these three kings," so talking about Israel, Edom, and Judah together. "The Lord, specifically, has called us to give them into the hand of Moab." And Jehoshaphat said, "Is there no prophet of the Lord here through whom we may inquire of the Lord?" Then one of the king of Israel's servants answered, "Elisha the son of Shaphat is here, who poured water on the hands of Elijah." And Jehoshaphat said, "The word of the Lord is with him." So the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat and the king of Edom went down to him. And Elisha said to the king of Israel, which is the one we're talking about here, specifically talks to him, "What have I to do with you? Go to the prophets of your father and to the prophets of your mother." See, Elisha knows, look, I know who you are. I know who your dad is. I know who your mom is. And you have been following after their sins. So why would you come talk to me? You go ask them and all their prophets. By the way, Elijah killed a lot of them. But we'll let that continue from there. But the king of Israel said, "No, it is the Lord who has called these three kings to give them into the hand of Moab." Jehoram realizes this. We're not succeeding because we don't have God on our side. He's watched Jehoshaphat, and this is where they have this close bond. Jehoshaphat's already told him, "Look, the reason why Judah is doing okay, it's not on our own power, our own merit. It's because of who God is. It's because of where his name can be found, which is in Jerusalem. So God's not going to wipe us out because of promises he has made." I think Jehoram, because of his good connection with a good man like Jehoshaphat, starts to get it. And so he says, "All right, we need God on our side." And this is why he's talking to Elisha. And he's like, "Look, we know that we're in trouble because God is against us because we've been doing some evil." The same thing that we saw where Jehoshaphat was making this alliance with Ahab, where God's like, "Look, you can't approve of evil," I think is also being explained here as well. And then verse 14. So Elisha said, "As the Lord of hosts lives before whom I stand, were it not that I have regard for Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, I would neither look at you nor see you. But now bring me a musician." And when the musician is played, the hand of the Lord came upon him. And then he goes on and tells the story of one of the prophets and how they are saved from here. It's interesting. If we're looking at the overarching question of how did we end up where we are today with the exile that they're going to be experiencing and where could we have done better, this was a beginning point. A man like this, where he was so close to understand what God was able to do, but he failed. He is the second son of Ahab. Okay? There was a promise that was made to Ahab that because of all your sins, your line is going to end. But because Ahab humbled himself, God says, I'm not going to end it with you, I'm going to end it with your son. And this is where it stops with Jehoram, the son of Ahab. He is killed by a man named Jehu, which we're going to see very soon. That is this man is on a rampage, but it's going to be a God-approved one that he's making some changes. But you'll see all this next week. But that's where these last few lines tell us the story of Jehoram and what God's plan is all about. And this is where Omri's dynasty is going to end. It's going to stop with him. Now, here we go. You ready? We talked about the family lines. If you want it one more time, let's just bring it up. Okay. We've got Ahab with his daughter Athaliah, Jehoram and Ahaziah. We've got from Abijah, Asa, Jehoshaphat to Jehoram to Ahaziah. Okay, same names, but it's going to be trickling down from here. Just know we're about to swap. It's the same names, but we're now going to focus on Judah. Are you ready? So we've got it laid out. Let's talk about Jehoram. So we just came from Jehoram of Israel. Now we're going to talk about Jehoram of Judah. Not the same person, but why'd you name your kids the same name? Like, they're friends together. We know this. And they're still naming each other the same thing. I just think it's interesting. But we have to work with what we've got. So 2 Kings chapter 8, starting in verse 16. This is where we get a little bit of information about Jehoram. Or remember, Joram. So 2 Kings chapter 8, verse 16. In the fifth year of Joram, the son of Ahab. Different name, different Ahab. Okay. King of Israel. When Jehoshaphat was king of Judah, Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, began to reign. And it's confusing if you'll slow down. Do you see where it makes sense? Do you see the difference between the Israel and the Ahab in this family line? And then we've got Judah in this family line. Read it slowly one more time. In the fifth year of Joram, or Jehoram, the son of Ahab, king of Israel, when Jehoshaphat was king of Judah, Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, began to reign. Just make it complicated, okay? But that's the way it is. So here's what we can know about Jehoram. He becomes king after his father dies. And although Jehoshaphat was a good king, Jehoram did evil because he walked in the way of the kings of Israel as the house of Ahab had done. Now, this is where this converging of lines happens. Let's look at verse 18 is what I was referencing. He walked in the way of the kings of Israel as the house of Ahab has done. This is one of the first times, if I'm not mistaken, this is the first time where a king of Judah is called evil like a king of Israel. Why? Here's the key. Ready? For the daughter of Ahab was his wife. What we found with Jehoshaphat is why he was good friends with Ahab is because he made a marriage alliance. He worked with Ahab and he said, let's take your daughter and my son and let's marry them together. Why did Jehoram fall? The converging of the lines between them. He married the daughter of Jezebel, the granddaughter of Omri, the daughter of Ahab, and he did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. I think it reinforces what we've already seen and what we would say commonly, it matters who you marry. We saw it with Ahab, and now we're seeing it with the king of Judah because he was in this marriage alliance that he gets in trouble. So once again, in spite of the evil that Jehoram committed, God did not destroy him for the sake of David and his promise. Look at verse 19. Yet the Lord was not willing to destroy Judah for the sake of David, his servant, since he promised to give a lamp to him and to his sons forever. Every time you see that phrase, just underline it and remember and just say how good God is. He's taken us to Jesus in spite of all the evil that is being done here. And so there's some battles, there's some things that happen with Jehoram being involved, but he has a very short story for us in Kings, but it's once again reinforcing God can make sure things happen even with our sin that is going on. And so the last king is Ahaziah, which is his son. And it's a short mention of him as well. And this is what's going to take us to next week, where you're going to find his life being ended by Jehu, which is actually going to blur. Jehu's going to come in and he's going to make reforms with Israel and he's going to make reforms with Judah. And we're going to learn a lot about him. So just a few little facts about him, but that's all that we've got. That was the last bell. So appreciate you guys. Thanks for holding on. Enjoy that family line.